Time to take a look at how you might deal with your aches or pains or sprains or strains. Hi, everybody. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us today as we move along with Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor who teaches at the UW Medical School, and a regular couple of regulars that we've had on for a long, long time. Glad to have them back, and certainly if you have some questions for them, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Bill, welcome back.
Good morning. Good to be back again. Thank you.
And Lori, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Good to be here on such a beautiful day. Makes one want to go out for a run.
It certainly does. What about, though, those who stay inside and work on video games? Are you guys seeing any increase in the number of people who say my thumbs are killing me or my fingers or whatever?
Well, me personally, no, I'm in a different type of a clinic. I see people with different kinds of issues. But, you know, reading about it in newspapers and magazines and some of the health journals, it's certainly a high-risk opportunity for repetitive overuse. Tendinitis types of things develop around the thumbs, fingers, wrists, and hands. And, you know, it's the repetition, a nonstop use that sets people up for these problems developing.
Yeah. It's similar to people who work at a keyboard all day. You know, if you spend a lot of hours working with your hands, you can develop overuse syndromes, tendinitises around your fingers and wrist, and overuse syndromes in your forearm as well. So it's better to get outside and play.
Yes. The other thing, too, is when they use, whether it's the computer keyboard or the video games, is there's other postural issues generally as well. You know, you're sitting and you're slumped and you're just kind of, the screen's like a magnet, just draws you right towards it. So we're talking mainly about thumbs and fingers and wrists, but it can have impacts up above through the shoulders and head neck region as well.
Well, let's find out if anybody has those kinds of issues today. Arlene in New Berlin's first. Hi, Arlene. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. The reason I'm calling, I have a little dilemma. On my right hand, my middle finger and the third finger, I had lockup. And my orthopedic specialist injected my knuckles with cortisone. And I was fine for a while. Now, all of a sudden, I have a hot presence in my wrist, and at night it is so bad when I'm laying down that it wakes me up, and I have to, if I stand up, I'm fine. If I lay down, I can't stand it. My hand is so hot, it's like I've got a hot poker in my hand. And I'm wondering what that's caused from, because I do not use a computer all day. I work in a hospital, but I'm not at the computer all day. I do some charting, but you know, at home I'm not on the computer that much, maybe 5 minutes. And so I'm wondering what the heck is going on. Is the cortisone causing this, or
did that start? How long did that start after you got your cortisone injections?
Oh, I want to say maybe 6 to 8 weeks. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm taking magnesium and zinc because of my restless leg syndrome. So now I don't know if that might be causing it also.
Doubtful. What caused your hand problem in the first place?
A lock up in my joints. I couldn't write. I'm right-handed, and you write out checks, and every time I try to write a check, my knuckles would lock up on me, and it was like, oh, mother.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds to me like you've got some sort of an issue with that right arm in general, and it's more likely that your wrist problem is related to whatever's going on in your fingers. I don't know what you mean by the term lockup, if they actually lock.
When I'm writing, you know how you bend your knuckles?
Uh-huh.
Well, it'll lock up at me, and then I can't straighten them out. So I went and had in the cortisone shot so that I could write. Otherwise, my husband is going to have to do it.
Oh, okay. All right. Here's what I would recommend. I would recommend seeing a certified hand therapist, someone who can evaluate your finger. Those joints, they shouldn't do that. Okay? So my question is it coming from inside the joint that's causing it to lock, or something outside the joint? The ligaments and tendons of the hand are very intricate. And if you may have had some damage to a ligament that's causing that joint to lock. Anyway, you have something going on with that wrist and hand. So I go and see a certified hand therapist. It can be a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. Both are hand therapists, and they specialize in that. And they can take a look at the wrist and at the fingers, the posture you use when you write, and so on, and get you on the right track.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, Arlene, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Amanda in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a pain in my right heel that I've been dealing with for a while, and the only time that it hurts is when I flex my foot, and it sends a shocking, very intense pain in inside of my heel. And it doesn't hurt if my foot is flexed and my knee is bent. And I'm on my feet all the time. I work on my feet. And a while back, I was running a lot, and I've had some issues possibly with my sciatic nerves down the sides of my legs. And at one point, I don't know if it's related, but on my left leg, I kind of messed up my IT band. And so I was going to the chiropractor, and my pelvis is tilted, and one leg is shorter or longer than the other. And so since then, I've just had this series of things going on, pain in my upper glute when I exercise. And so, but this pain is something that I'm not really able to get rid of, and I'm doing yoga and trying to stretch it out, but I don't know what it is, but it's very, very intense.
Okay.
Bill?
Amanda, can you describe, what do you mean by flexing the foot? Are you pointing the toes down to the floor or pointing them up to the ceiling?
Pointing them towards me. If my knee is completely straight,
yep,
and I start bending my toes towards me,
okay,
there's an intense, sharp pain inside of my heel.
Okay. And when you say inside your heel, are you talking at the bottom of your heel, inside the bone?
I would say, you know what, the meat on the bottom.
Okay.
Inside there.
All right. All right. Any numbness or tingling with this at all down in the foot?
Toes, not really. I mean, it kind of, it's like a warm-up, like, tingle and then really, really sharp pain.
Okay. All right. Well, there's other questions I can ask you, but just the fact of all the things you described to me that are going on in different areas, the hips and your foot and how your knee position impacts the what you're feeling in the foot, I'd recommend that you see a physical therapist who can examine you for your entire lower quarter, from your feet on up into the low back and mid-back area. It's possible that this could be related to your back. It could also be possible that it's related to a local heel cord, tendon issue as well, mm-hmm. Or a combination of those.
The heel cord tendon thing kind of strikes me because I went to a massage therapist to see if I couldn't work it out,
mm-hmm.
and we looked at the human body. She has this poster in her office, and there's a really thin tendon that runs down the back of the calf into that part of the heel,
right?
And
uh-huh.
it really does feel like it's a sharp kind of something pulling, and all of a sudden it just hurts.
Yeah.
And so she rubbed that out, and it helped a lot. I was able to actually flex my foot a third more than I was before until I felt the pain, but
okay,
it's still there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, there are muscles and tendons that you're stretching. When your knee's extended and you pull your toes like that, you're also stretching the sciatic nerve a bit as well. So, again, I think seeing someone who can really do a good job of diagnosing your entire lower quarter and then hopefully there's some things like whether it's massage or certain stretches or strengthening certain muscle groups that can kind of rebalance things for you, especially with the activities it sounds like that you like to do.
Yeah, there's been some new, I don't know if it's new, but some literature about entrapment, some nerve entrapment around the fat pad of your heel, and that can be associated with your sciatic nerve. So those things all could be interrelated.
Now, is this something that could be, I mean, you're saying going to a therapist, but could it possibly be something that I would need surgery on? I mean,
no.
Unlikely.
Yeah, very unlikely. Certainly at this point in time, there's lots of other options short of that.
Okay.
And you should pursue all of them before you ever considered surgery.
Yeah, yeah. The first thing is finding the source of the pain, and that's what a good physical therapist will do. And then you can try some interventions after that. Once you find the source of the pain, then you can decide whether or not there's even a surgery that can deal with that problem. And it sounds soft tissue, so it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good luck.
Yeah, I wish I had insurance.
Be sure to let the physical therapist know that, because
yeah.
it's part of our practice act. It's part of our job to treat all patients with or without insurance. So be sure to let them know that, and they should be able to accommodate you.
And thanks, Amanda. Appreciate the call. And we'll take some more calls. Bob and Menasha, you are next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a left shoulder problem. A little history. I had the rotator cuff, complete rotator cuff tear repaired in 96. And I had another rotator cuff and bicep tendon tear that was repaired in 2001. Now I've got a spot about 2 inches down from the shoulder on the arm where occasionally it seems to lock up or bind. I don't know if that would be scar tissue or if there's something I tore again.
So you had a complete tear and you had it repaired and then you tore it again?
I had a complete tear in 96 and had that repaired in 97. Then I had complete tear in 2001 and had that repaired.
Along with the biceps?
Yes.
They repaired.
They got a hold of the bicep tendon. They brought that back up.
They brought it back up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is this your dominant arm? You're not dominant.
No, it's my left arm.
Okay.
And there are certain times when if I'm sitting at the computer and I just have it resting on my leg,
mm-hmm.
I try to bring it up and there's like a bind.
Is it like a catch?
Yep.
And then can you move it around and get it going again?
If I move it around, yes, then I can get past that.
Okay. Yeah, I expect that you probably have a significant amount of scar tissue in there from two traumas, which we didn't even get into what caused the tears in the first place, and
both
then surgical
falls.
Repair. What?
They were both falls.
Both falls.
Where I landed,
yeah.
Landed on the forearm. And
oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so first you had a tremendous amount of trauma to not just the rotator cuff and the biceps, but to all the tissues in the area, the bone, the articular cartilage, the capsule, all the soft tissues in the area were damaged. Then you go in and you do surgery and you cut through a bunch of that stuff and you sew it back up together again. You're going to have a lot of scar tissue in the bursa, et cetera. So, you know, as long as you can kind of move it around and get it going again, if it's not causing you pain, it's not incapacitating you in terms of your work or leisure activities, I wouldn't sweat it. I just make sure that I continued with whatever exercises you were given to help maintain the strength and mobility in that shoulder, because you're going to need a good long-term maintenance program.
Well, that was another, if I should go back to physical therapy and maybe get some more insight on things to do, because I am not crazy about having surgery again.
That's always a good idea, because, you know, scar tissue and such remodels truly over years. And so the things that you did immediately post-op may not be the right things for you to be doing now. So going back in for a tune-up, so to speak, a reassessment of where you're at now, what your strength is, what your activity preferences are, what your mobility is, and getting a new program is a really good idea, and I'd encourage you to do that.
Yeah, because the surgeon both times said, boy, there really isn't much left to work with in there.
Well, yeah. There you go.
There you go. Good luck, Bob. Thanks very much for your call. And let's take some more calls. If you'd like to join in, by the way, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault on this edition of Conversations with Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. And since all of our lines are filled, I'm going right back to the phones and to Helen in Oshkosh. Helen, hello. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're entirely right. I'm so glad I could call you. I've been wondering about what I should do. I slipped on a wet spot on my floor and cracked two ribs. And all the doctor did was give me some Percocet for the pain. I don't like the feeling of not being in charge. Now, how long, what can I do, what can I not do?
Well, okay. I can understand the feeling, and I've had a couple cracked ribs in the past as well. How long ago was the fall and breaking
the
ribs?
Just a week ago, Saturday.
Okay, so you got a few weeks yet of healing.
Oh, I
do.
Know, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. Do you have a rib binder?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's one thing that I personally have found very helpful, and some patients I've recommended to have found very helpful. It's basically an elastic band Velcro that you can put snugly around your rib cage. It just supports your rib cage.
Okay.
And you know, and you can modify. It doesn't need to be overly tight. You should still be able to breathe easily, but snug adds enough support that can really help comfort-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're in bed, changing positions in bed.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got a sneeze coming on, you know, those kinds of things. I found the rib binder to be very helpful.
Okay. And, you know, the Percocet the physician gave to you for your pain. So if you're not having a lot of pain, you don't have to take them. Or if you are still having a lot of pain and something over the counter isn't working for you, you can talk to your doctor about something that may be... I'm sorry?
That would be quite as powerful.
Right, right. There's other options for pain control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Helen, one thing you can use, if you have a cold pack laying around the house...
Sitting in a hot pack.
Well, if the pain is sharp and still more acute, I would use ice instead of heat.
When you're
dealing with more stiffness and that kind of sensation, then I could use either heat or ice. Just depends on how intense the pain is. But putting a cold pack over the area can take the edge off it as well.
Yep.
I'll change from hot to cold.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. I need it.
All right. Good luck, Helen.
Thanks a lot. You know, just a quick moment to say congratulations to the University of Wisconsin women's hockey team.
Yes.
That won the national championship.
Wow, yeah, fantastic.
And the reason I brought it up was because Sarah Bauer, the best player, or, you know, certainly a premier player on the team, had two broken, cracked ribs and played several games.
Right.
Can you imagine playing hockey with cracked ribs?
No.
With good solid ribs, it can be painful enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Amazing story.
Still managed to be player of the year for the nation. Christy in East Troy, it's your turn next. Hi, Christy.
Hi. Hey, I after the big snowfall in the beginning of December, I had to shovel that day, and then the next day I moved to an upstairs apartment. And ever since then, I've been having clicking in my back, and it doesn't happen, like, first thing in the morning, but through, like, the middle of the day. As I'm walking, I can feel this clicking. There's no pain, but there's this clicking in the...
Is it a sound? Is it a sound, or is it a feeling?
It's a feeling of clicking.
Okay.
And as I'm walking, obviously, if I'm not moving, it doesn't move, so.
Right, right. And the clicking, does it feel deep inside? Is it in the middle, off the one side versus the other?
No, it feels like straight, like it feels like it's in my spine. Okay. It feels right in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. You know, generally, when I hear about the sensation of clicking or sometimes you can hear things clicking, if there's no pain associated with it and you're not getting caught or stuck in certain positions,
mm-mm,
I tend not to worry so much about it.
Okay.
But having said that, this has been around for a while. You've never had it before and associated with walking. I guess my recommendation would be that if it's concerning enough, I would go see a physical therapist who can examine your back, examine your sacroiliac joints in the hip area,
mm-hmm,
and see if they can come up with a reason why this might have started. And it may be that there needs to be some manual therapy or an exercise recommendation or two they can provide you to try to eliminate it so it doesn't become painful.
Sure. That's what I'm concerned is, the longer it goes on, is it going to become
right,
pain?
Right.
Do you do any regular exercise now, Christy?
Walking.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you might try something like a Pilates class or something like that, some sort of exercise regimen that focuses on core strengthening, your back, your abdominals, your hip and pelvis, and you might find that just improving your overall core strength helps with it as well.
Like I said, it came after a lot of labor-intensive activity.
Right, right. In a very short period of time.
Lots of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, so give those a try.
All right, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for calling. And on to Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
An interesting question. I've been bicycle riding for around 50 more years, and for the first 25, I rode what I called a racing bike till my neck got stiff. And I tried changing the handlebars and raising the stem and et cetera, et cetera. But then about 22 years ago, I got on a recumbent, And that alleviated all that pressure. And the pressure on my hands, which I had when I was riding like 100 or better miles a day, also was strong. I'm wondering at times when I see people go by my place. I live in the country, and I have access to riding a bike like 25 or 50 or 80 miles without too much traffic. So I do it often, at least a couple thousand miles. And I see them with that neck tilted back, which gives me a pain just looking at it.
Sympathy pain.
Is that any kind of an affliction that you see that bicyclists experience?
I certainly experienced it on my road bike, my racing bike. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's again, it's the repetition, it's the posture being for long periods of time, and you mentioned your wrist and hands as well. But the neck, you have to be able to see in front of you. And so having the neck cranked up in that position for long periods of time without accompanying your biking with a good exercise program for stretching certain muscle groups and doing lots of strengthening, you can get people into trouble.
Well, I found that I still had a feeling from it, but a couple of months ago someone told me to try acupuncture, which I did, and that's alleviated. It wasn't really that painful, but I thought, hey, if I can do a little with it, I've got a lot better range of motion now than I had before. But one other thing about these recumbents, you don't have to worry about this prostate problem, which a lot of people talk about for men, riding those narrow seats. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I was never into that. But for older people, I would recommend those a lot, because if you fall down, you're not going to fall very far.
Right.
That's a big factor, you know.
Right. So as long as people can see you when you're on the road in that recumbent bike.
Well, I usually put a flag on.
Yes.
That
helps
a lot. In fact, I think it ought to almost be mandatory for all bicycles, but that would raise a lot of stink about it, too.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, but it's a good idea.
It's a very, very good idea. And, you know, if you're going, and I've done, 100 miles in a day or so, or even 120, you can think of. But when you bike 60, 70, 80, 100 miles, I mean, on one of those bikes, your neck is really...
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, even if you're in really good shape, it takes its toll.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely
takes
its toll.
That's where the cross-training is such a good thing. Just mixing some other type of training, conditioning, activity in with what you like to do the best, just giving those muscles and those joints a bit of a break every now and then can go a long ways.
Yep. Thanks, Jerry. Kathy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a problem with my upper arm, the underside of my upper arm. Oh, I'd say maybe 6 inches or so above the elbow. It gets very sore, primarily when I'm on my computer. And I'm on my computer anywhere from 0 to maybe 2 or 3 hours a day. And I thought that I had taken care of it by taking a little TV-type tray, setting it next to it, and resting my arm on there. But it just doesn't seem to help.
Hmm.
When you say, is it under both arms or one arm?
Just the right.
Just the right side. And so the soreness, I mean, is it sharp, burning, tingling? How would you describe it, Kathy?
Dull. Just plain almost overwork.
Okay. All right. And does the pain go below your elbow into your fingers or hand?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. So pretty local. All right. Well, your workstation and thinking about, the chair you might be sitting in and the height of your keyboard and the height of your monitor, all those things can play into aches and pains developing when people are at a computer. Having a good chair that you can adjust the height of the chair, the tilt of the back, are there armrests on the chair, can you pull the chair up close enough to the keyboard, all make a difference in your posture. The fact that this tray helped you, at least temporarily, I think would support that there's maybe some posture issues going along with the way your computer station is set up. So I don't know if you've got a chair that you can adjust, if you can adjust the height of your keyboard and monitor and armrests, how much flexibility you have in your setup at home.
Are you turning your head in one direction or another to look at documents?
Not really. What I'm doing is generally just surfing the web. I get an idea in my head and I look it up and I read it for hours.
And that leads to, I know all about that.
Okay, and are you mousing with your right hand?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You know, that could be part of the problem. I'm trying to figure out why you're having symptoms in one arm and not the other if you're right. keyboarding equally with both hands. So there might be something about your mousing and that extension that you have to do that pulls in your upper arm uh-huh. muscles to extend your arm when you do the mouse. So I don't know if changing to a different kind of mouse, like a trackball or something that you don't have to move around,
okay.
if that could be part of your problem. But look
okay.
into that as a possibility also.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll check out a trackball then.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yep,
you
thanks.
Bet. Good luck, Kathy.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. And Dewey in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I like to hike, and I have a propensity to roll my left ankle outwards.
Okay.
I herniated a disc in 1995 and had surgery on it, and then I have some permanent nerve damage in my back. Like 40% to my left leg. And there's quite a bit of atrophy. But anyway, I'd like to get a walking stick, and I don't know if I should hold that in my left or my right hand.
So it's your left leg that you have
right.
trouble with? And it goes in your
but
right
I roll
hand?
It. I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. It should go in your right hand.
Okay, even though I roll my ankle to the outside?
Correct.
Because that seems like it's worse on uneven ground or if I'm walking a hill that slopes the wrong
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
So I just still hold it in my right hand.
Yes. A walking stick or a cane really does very little to relieve weight bearing, but what it does is it gives you balance. So if you think about normal walking, as your left foot goes forward, so does your right hand, correct?
Yes.
If you walk forward, if you step forward with your left foot and your left hand goes forward, then it makes a very funny-looking gait, a Charlie Chaplin type of gait.
Mm-hmm.
So your right hand goes forward. If you put the walking stick in your right hand, then it's going out at the same time as your left foot. So it gives support to your left foot. If you put it on your left side, what you do is you end up with this funky gait where when you put your left foot down, you lean to the left. And when you put your right foot down, you lean back to the right, and you do have this staggering type gait. So it goes in your right hand. It increases the width of your base of support so that if you think of your base of support as from the walking stick in your right hand to your left foot, then you pass your center of gravity right through this big wide base of support. If you put your cane on the outside on your left hand, then your base of support is way over outside of where your center of gravity is, where your body is. So you end up having to swing your body back and forth. So that's the quick lesson in the biomechanics of walking with a single assistive device.
<Yes. laughs>
Goes in the opposite hand.
Okay.
If I could ask, do you wear any kind of orthotic or so any kind of support around that foot or ankle?
I don't. I really don't have problem unless it's more when I, you know, go on like a 10-mile hike and it's, I don't know if it's I lose my concentration or if it's just that I get tired, but it's more on uneven ground, so it's,
right.
you know, it's not
that
all that
sense.
Often that I have a problem with it, but it hurts a lot when I do it.
So. Yeah, I'm sure it does. And then so the hiking shoes, are they boots that you wear or shoes that you wear?
Yeah, I try and wear boots with a little more ankle support that come up a little bit higher.
Okay, that's good. Otherwise, they have simple ankle lace-up braces that you could wear just for those long
right.
hikes, and those are very effective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get those?
Any sporting goods store.
Yeah.
It's just a lace-up ankle brace.
REI type stores.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend checking into that as well.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Gloria in Ashland next. Hi, Gloria.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've got tennis elbow and it's really bad. And I'm wondering what is the best treatment for it?
We're wondering that too. The research is ongoing in that. Most of these what we call tendinopathies, for lack of a better term, especially about the elbow, are actually degenerative changes in your elbow or in the tendon itself. And as such, anti-inflammatory medication, sometimes people like to say, oh, they call it a tendinitis, and so it's inflammatory, so I need to take an anti-inflammatory medication, and it doesn't really help. So what you need is to kind of offload the tendon so it can heal to the best of its ability. A wrist splint will help with that. A forearm strap will help with that. And then some guidance in a graduated exercise program to increase the strength of the remaining tendon, the tendon that's not degenerated, along with judicious use of ice, activity control, etc.
So yeah, because I know when I do any vacuuming or anything like that, oh, my goodness.
Oh, give up the vacuuming. Get someone else really to do the vacuuming, yeah.
Yeah. Now, would an elbow brace be better than just that band brace?
No, that's a very good question. The reason being that the spot where you have pain is actually the origin of the muscles that move your wrist. They have essentially no function at your elbow. So immobilizing or supporting your elbow isn't going to change those muscles at all. That's why it hurts so much when you grip a doorknob, when you grip a gallon of milk, when you grip your vacuum, because it's actually the muscles that function at your wrist to assist in grip. So that's why I said the wrist splint is actually more helpful.
Mm-hmm. The wrist splint is?
A wrist splint, yes.
Oh, okay.
And that forearm strap.
The forearm strap.
Uh-huh. The forearm strap as well.
Yeah, I've been wearing that, but I don't seem to get much relief from that. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, what is the best position to keep your arm in? I kind of noticed that if I keep my arm bent like I'd have it in a sling, it feels better than if I straighten it.
Right, it takes some of the tension off of it, but you don't want to lose motion at your elbow over this. And some stretching exercises for your wrist to work those muscles. Have you seen a physical therapist at all for this?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I'd probably go there. It sounds to me, as severe as your problem is, you could use some guidance, just kind of walking through what to do when to use ice, when to use a strap, when to use a splint, what kind of exercises to do and when and so on, just to help get you through this, because it's a very difficult problem to handle on your own.
Good luck. And thanks very much for calling, Gloria. Appreciate it. And we'll take another call. Let's go to Barb in Green Bay. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been having problems with my right hip for approximately 9 months, and I can pinpoint exactly when it happened or the first time the pain occurred, and that was I was running on an indoor track, and I just got an intense pain that just wouldn't seem to go away. And ever since that time, whenever I try to do, whenever I do running, in particular running, it really seems to bother me. And I had gone in, had an x-ray. The x-ray didn't show anything. The doctor kind of termed it tendonitis, but he really had a hard time pinpointing that pain. Just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Barb, when you say your hip, are you talking in the groin area, on the side of your hip, deep in the buttock area?
Yep, the outside hip, kind of more towards the upper hip area.
Okay, all right. Well, certainly there are tendons in that area. There are bursa in that area. Sometimes that pain can be coming from your low back as well as some deeper structures around the hip. Have you taken time off from running?
I have, yes. I've tried to take 2 full weeks off, and as soon as I start again, pain comes right back.
Now, okay.
I've tried to do standing aerobics. That does not seem to bother it as much.
Okay.
Circular running seems to be the most difficult on it.
Yeah, okay. My recommendation would be that if you haven't, I would see a physical therapist who could examine the hip area, but also since it's running and your feet, all the way down to your feet and ankles, look at your foot and ankle mechanics, flexibility and strength throughout your legs as well as in the trunk. It may be that a little bit of a muscle imbalance had set you up for this occurring 9 months ago. But obviously, there's something underlying going on that's not allowing this to heal completely when you restart your activity.
It's not. It sounds fairly much like trochanteric bursitis for people who run on tracks or on uneven surfaces or run on the side of the road. Often get things like that. As Bill said, some of those muscles originate in your hip. So addressing weakness or imbalances around the hip can help deal with that. But also some local measures directed right at that area.
Yeah.
I heard you had mentioned Pilates to a few other callers. Would that be considered the core area as well?
Yes, generally that's the focus of those types of programs. Yeah.
But Barbara, for the complaints you have, ideally if you could see a physical therapist first and make sure they develop an individualized program for you, because generally once you recover from this, then you look at things you do to prevent it from coming back again. And that's where things like Pilates can be very, very helpful and useful.
I have an appointment set up for tomorrow for a physical therapist. Now, I don't know if he or she specializes in a certain part of the body. Should that be a concern?
I would think not in the beginning. I would think any physical therapist should be able to do a good examination, come up with a treatment plan for you. One thing that could be helpful, if you bring in your running shoes with you and maybe another footwear that you wear a lot, that should help the physical therapist. Physical therapists with any kind of background should be able to get you started on a really good program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Terrific. All right. Thank you so
good
much.
Luck.
Yep. Thanks, Barb. Thanks for calling. And Dolores in Kenosha, on to you.
Yes. Well, I have a question about my mother. She's in her early 80s. She is in a nursing home with some short-term memory loss, and she's been having more leg weakness and some pain in the joints. And I have to say that they're very good at, to the point where she'll say, well, she doesn't want to get up in the morning. And they're very good at getting her something for that, getting her up and moving. What can we as the family do to encourage, just it's something we can do that'll be beneficial to her, but not, come on, Ma, we're doing some therapy. Because that's going to be highly resisted.
Uh-huh. Well, what does she like to do?
She does like to go out. The weather is getting better. And in Kenosha here, there are places to go and people that we could go see and things like that. And a lot of places we could walk. But I'm kind of looking for some guidelines on what would be the most beneficial and the least resisted.
Yeah, well, you're knowing her personality will give you the best clue about least resisted. But generally, you know, we think of it as the carrot. You know, what do they like to do? Mm-hmm. If they like to go out and visit friends, then, walking out to the car, walking to visit the friend, or rather than, you know, meeting at the friend's house, meet at a park and do a short walk there. But if any way you can construct your time together so that there's bouts of walking and getting up and down from a chair as part of the normal activity so it doesn't look contrived, that's a good thing to do. And parks are always good because you can walk and look at something and you can sit on a bench. Then you can stand up again and walk and look at something and then sit down again. So that kind of activity that's part of the normal routine for whatever it is a good way to do it. Now, church is always good. Stand, sit, stand.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
right.
Do you have a zoo in Kenosha? I can't remember if you do or not.
No, the zoo's they have a good zoo in Racine, though.
Well, I tell you what, my mother was sort of in a similar kind of situation, and she loved to go to the Vilas Park Zoo in Madison. So every week I would take her to the zoo, and as her memory got worse and worse, it was always like going for the first time after a while. But she loved it as much for the walking as to see the little kids.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I say kids and animals, a good
combination. Kids and animals, a great combination.
Well, the grandkids could be enlisted for that one.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, good luck. Yeah.
Good luck.
Good
thank
for
you.
Thank you
very much for calling. Talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Glad to have you aboard. Polly in Green Bay, you are next. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Well, it's what's on my shoulder.
Nope. Okay.
I am 42 years old. Over the last 20 years, I have dislocated my left shoulder 3 times.
Mm.
Each successive time, more strange and bizarre than the last. It just doesn't take very much for that shoulder to pop out. Mm-hmm. The most recent time was 2 weeks ago. I was laying on my stomach and rolled over in bed and dislocated my shoulder.
Ah.
Oh, uh-huh. Boy.
Okay. And can you put it back in yourself?
That's what I had to do.
Okay.
That's what I had to do. Yeah, it took some finagling, but I knew that I couldn't reach the phone and couldn't, call for help. So I pretty much pulled it right back into place and retained full range of motion. You know, I've been icing it down. Went and saw my chiropractor, have had several adjustments since then. I seem to be doing pretty well. There's some bilateral things going on, so you know, there's some soreness and things. But what I would like to do is to get some exercises to help strengthen that muscle, perhaps. I know it's kind of strange. You can't really tighten it up through exercise, but...
Oh, that's not true. You can.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of swimming.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, you probably pick the one sport that requires a lot of shoulder mobility and puts your shoulders most at risk of instability.
Yeah.
That's the probably, if I thought about females and swimmers, the first thing that comes to mind is shoulder instability. So,
in fact, the first time I dislocated it, I had done a surface dive in a river upstream and it lifted it right out.
Oh, my. No, seeing a physical therapist who deals with maybe sports-related injuries or instabilities, the muscles actually have connections in the joint capsule, and increasing the resting tension in the muscles can actually provide some stability to the shoulder girdle. And if you think about it, if someone came up and tried to pull your arm out of joint, what would you do?
Slap them.
I slap. Very good. Very good. But if you couldn't slap them, you'd probably tighten up your muscles.
Tighten up the muscle. And
exactly.
Be pulled back, but,
right,
yeah.
And it would, and the muscles would hold it in place.
Yeah.
And so, given that you've only had three dislocations, no, really, for people with chronic dislocations, you know, three isn't all that many over the course of 20-some years. You know, so you're in an age group now where it should be improving. So getting a rehab program that focuses on what we call high speed, quick range of motion, short range of motion, high speed exercises called stabilization exercises can help protect your shoulder from reoccurrence.
Very good.
So that it can be done. And
that's, I think the last time I was in physical therapy for this was about 13 years ago. And
yeah.
I had, like, the hand done, like, it's almost like a bicycle, but you move it by the hand.
Yeah, yeah, the upper body ergometer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fine general exercise, but you need a specific stabilization program.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah,
all right,
thanks,
good luck.
Polly. And Bill in Hales Corners, you're next. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm 51, and about 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with osteoarthritis in the ball of my foot, and I do a lot of running, and so at the time, you know, I had the swelling and the discomfort, the pain in there, and I know, like, cross-country skiing made it worse, and so I bought some, like, sorbitane inserts, I was diagnosed with, not diagnosed, but when I went into the service years ago, I had a flat foot on that side. And so I bought some arch supports, and I started taking the, you know, glucosamine chondroitin, I guess, because I thought that would help. The doctor actually didn't tell me anything that I could do about it. So, and now it's kind of, you know, the swelling's still there, but it doesn't hurt as much, and I can kind of tolerate it. But I'm just kind of wondering if I'm flat-footed there and I'm running a lot, if maybe I'm somehow making that happen.
Well, yes. The answer is probably yes. Have you seen a physical therapist?
No.
You know, that's what I would recommend, Bill, at this stage. The inserts that you purchase can be a good thing for some people, but if you have a flat foot, especially if it's one side and not the other side,
right.
An orthotic design specifically for your foot or your feet can make a big difference.
Okay.
There's times also because of lack of mobility in certain joints of the foot complex where some stretching can be helpful.
Okay.
So at least some balance work, some strengthening through the leg can also be helpful. But you know, having somebody do a good biomechanical examination of your feet and design an orthotic for you, I think, would be a good place to start.
So I should see a physical therapist about that kind of thing?
Yes.
For
the orthotic. Yes. And possibly, you know, a physical therapist working in a sports medicine clinic where they work with lots of runners.
Right.
I think would be very useful.
Okay.
And someone who can look at your entire lower extremity, because it's curious why you'd have one foot that's more flat than the other. I mean, typically we're fairly symmetric.
Right.
So sometimes you accommodate for a long leg with flat-footedness on one side and a shorter leg with supination on the other side to equal yourself out.
Sure.
So there's some things to look at to see if there's an underlying cause that's been overlooked. And also, as Bill said, the custom orthotic. We don't usually say, oh, custom orthotic first. For the average garden variety flat-footedness, it works for a lot of people. But for someone with osteoarthritis in the foot, you really want a well-made orthotic device that will distribute loads over a greater area.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bill,
Thank you.
If you go and bring your running shoes along with you,
okay.
that'll help the therapist as well.
Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for calling. And Pat in Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Hi, Pat.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to call in the lady that called in about her tennis elbow. I had that. At least I believe it was. I was told it was the same thing. I got it from shoveling snow.
Uh-huh.
But went to the doctor, some physical therapy, and got a few exercises. But what really helped enormously was I went online, I believe it was. There's a cream, and you can find it online. I'm almost positive it's CT cream, C like in Charlie, T like in Tom, ctcream.com. And it was created by a couple of doctors, and I forgot the whole story behind it. But essentially, I put it on like three or four times a day, and I don't recall if it was 4 days or 5 days, something like that, and it went away. And I kept putting it on for a few more days, but and I've had two other people that I've given some of that to because I ordered a bunch of it and didn't eat it all, and it worked for them as well. So I would very, very much recommend that. It's amazing to get rid of that pain, how good that it feels.
Yes, getting rid of pain is usually a good thing. Well, thanks for the information, Pat. I think one of the points that we made with the earlier caller was when the longer this type of problem goes on, the harder it is for someone to get rid of it. And it, as Lori mentioned, it's a degenerative process within the tendon for many of these folks. And so you want to make sure you get on the right program for you and maybe some things that people can purchase to help facilitate recovery.
Right. And this the way this worked is the story behind when they created it was whatever the ingredients, they help heal the tendon. But the problem before they created the cream was they had to inject it, and that caused some other problems. And this cream they created and figured out a way to make it go through the skin barrier. So it really did, and I've still got some just because I remember the pain in case I ever have to use it again. But it went away, and it didn't come back. And all the exercises, it helped some, but it had not eliminated the pain.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. We did a little search online here, and it's apparently it delivers vitamin B6, pyridoxine, is it? Choline and arnica deep into the affected area.
I haven't seen it studied anywhere in the medical literature at all, so it's I'm sure it's not a a controlled by FDA. It's something that these guys have developed, so it hasn't been studied in any way, so I can't speak to it from that aspect.
Certainly, it worked for Pat. Most creams don't penetrate that deep to get to where this tendinous problem is, but if it helped and there's no rash developed, and it was the right thing for Pat.
Yeah, well, the one thing you can say about tennis elbow is the tendon is about as superficial as tendons get anywhere in your body. Well, the Achilles and the patellar tendon, too. So, so it's pretty superficial tendon, so... Thank you for that information.
Appreciate it
very
much.
Watch it.
Norm in Wausau, you're next. Hi, Norm. Thank you very much for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask your guests if they have any suggestions. I fractured the meniscal cartilage in both of my knees somewhat traumatically. Overlifting, I think, was the major thing. About a year and a half ago, and I got injections in that, which that and time took care of that fairly well. But subsequently, I have pain above and below the knee, and I've gone to physical therapy, and I'm going swimming. I try to do some walking, but nothing seems to help it, and sometimes it really bothers a lot. And in the morning, I hardly have any pain, but by the end of the day, I have quite a bit. A lot of it is medial. And then once in a while, it goes down the front of the leg below the knee. But a lot of it is medial, even above the knee. And I wonder if they had any suggestions on what to do for that.
Are your knees swollen?
I have some edema, but I had it before I fractured that cartilage.
And how did you fracture the cartilage?
Well, one was just climbing a stepladder, and it was just all of a sudden, it was just like you heard popcorn crunch, and I had excruciating pain and almost fell off the ladder.
Okay.
And the other time it was, I hate to admit this because I'm in my 70s, I was, my wife and I were loading a very large deer that I had shot with a bow onto a vehicle, and it was very, very heavy.
Okay. And last question, what did they inject your knees with?
Well, I've had just the steroids. He said the next thing would be glucosamine if that didn't work sufficiently. But it seems to do fairly well.
Okay.
But it doesn't affect that pain on the medial aspect or above and below.
Right. So you didn't have surgery on the meniscus?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, the meniscus is still torn.
Right.
So if you didn't go in and have surgery to remove torn fragments or whatever, so that meniscus is still there. What he did when he or she injected the cortisone was gave you a potent anti-inflammatory to calm down the inflammation in your joint as a result of the cartilage tear. Now, why did you get the cartilage tear? My guess is you have some degenerative joint disease because you don't show up with kind of snap, crackle, pop all of a sudden. I'm guessing you had some wear and tear on your joint surfaces, and when you climb that ladder or were doing the deer thing, you put just enough load on your meniscus where that rough joint surface tore up your meniscus. So my guess is your pain is coming from underlying degenerative joint disease and the torn meniscus that's still in there. So what can you do? Keep your weight down. Make sure you wear good supportive shoes. Avoid a lot of twisting in your knees. If you need to twist, take several small steps. Keep your quadricep muscles strong and stay in touch with your doctor.
Keep up with the pool, the water activity as well.
Yes.
And thanks very much for calling. Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller, talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains here on the Ideas Network. Dealing with physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Laurie Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School. Glad to have you visiting with us today. And, we lost our broken finger caller. So we are going to take another call, this one from Carol in De Pere. Carol, hi to you.
Hi there. I have a question. The long and short of it is, I had a knee replacement and I did all the exercises and I was very proud of myself because I could get my knee back to maybe 120 degrees, etc. I began having a lot of pain, which apparently is sciatic pain, and I was referred to a pain doctor and a physical therapist, and they both keep looking at me and shaking their heads and saying, oh, too loose, lax muscles. And I can't get up and down stairs. I live in a two-story home. So I need to know, what in the world are lax muscles?
Well, that's a good question, Carol. Some muscles can get overstretched. Some of the postural muscles, especially up in the back and neck and shoulder area, they can become overstretched. And then they lose their mechanical advantage. They're not quite as strong as they should be. Usually when we think of laxity, true tissue laxity, it's more ligamentous laxity as opposed to muscle laxity.
Well, maybe that's what they're talking about. I just assumed it was muscle.
So what they're referring to, what aspect?
How loose everything is. I can't, for instance, my big problem is going frontwards downstairs. Now, this has been a year in duration, and I have to turn around and go backwards down all stairs.
Because you're not strong enough.
That's right.
Okay.
And they apparently have shaken their heads and said, this is a losing battle. but I suggested this to the orthopedic doctor, and he said, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. We're kind of scratching our heads, too.
Well, Carol, when you go down the stairs, do you feel like your knee's going to give away?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Definitely.
So it's the knee.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that before your surgery?
Well,
I mean, you had pain before your surgery, but were you going down the stairs backwards?
It was weak. Yes, it was weak.
Okay.
But I thought I was going to fix that right up.
Okay. And your other knee's okay?
Well, I'm 70 years old and I have arthritis.
Right. But you could go down the stairs forward with that leg.
Sure.
Okay. And your arms are strong.
Yes.
Generally. Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure what your definition is, but yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So I'm just trying to find out if this is a global process, you know, affecting all of your muscles and joints, or if this is local to your operated leg.
Well, I probably don't have the strength I had 25 years ago.
Right. Well, yeah. Few of us do.
And I'm not an exerciser.
Okay.
That was why I was so proud of myself.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you need to continue to work on your rehab program, to work on strengthening. If you don't have the strength to walk down the stairs forward at this point, then you need to start going down forward from a smaller height. So instead of going down an 8-inch step, you need to start at a 3 or 4-inch step and see if you can do that and build up your strength doing that. If you can't lower your entire body weight down a step, you can try going down an 8-inch step in a pool to relieve some of your body weight. But it seems to me that you need to continue building up the strength in your knee, in your hip, in your core muscles to allow you to be able to do this.
Yeah. Carol, maybe if this is a different person, if it's possible, maybe go back and see the physical therapist that worked with you after the surgery, followed you for a while postoperatively. Like Lori's saying, I like to think that there's strengthening that can be done. You can strengthen muscles. You got your flexibility back, it sounds like, but you should be able to strengthen muscles. But you want to do it in a very graded fashion so you don't overdo it, though, too much too fast.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And David in Oklahoma is next. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Well, my questions are about lower back and hip pain. I've been a truck driver for about a little over 27 years, so I've been sitting down a long time. I have no trouble sitting, no pains or anything, but to get up and walk, even like, say, to a grocery store, the front of my thighs fall asleep, and if I stay stood up long enough, it even starts to burn.
And it's both legs, David?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And it gets worse with walking?
Yes.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, when you get pain and burning with walking, you have to worry about a couple things. One, it might be vascular in nature, blood supply to the muscles into your legs. Or it could be that there's a little bit of pressure on some nerves coming out of your back down into your legs as well. There's
a slight back pain in the lower back.
Okay.
I figure it's probably shot.
Well, there's probably something going on in your back somewhat. You know, there's it's claudication is the term that's provided with pain with walking. And it's either from vascular origin, not enough blood supply to the muscle groups, or it's called neurogenic claudication, and that's pressure on nerves in your back that cause leg symptoms when you walk. Generally, people with neurogenic claudication, they feel fine when they're sitting, but it's when they get up and walk is when they get into trouble. So that's kind of the direction that I would be leaning towards. Do you have coldness in your feet? Okay. All right. So no change in skin and lower legs, and your feet aren't cold, and any tingling or numbness going down below the knees?
Just in the feet.
Okay.
I get a little tingly. That'd be about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that also kind of supports it as well. Have you seen a physician for your back in the past?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, that's probably where I would start, is maybe see an orthopedist. If you have a family practice physician, start there. Or maybe see an orthopedist who can examine your back and look at the origin of the leg symptoms.
So an orthopedist would be a good place to start.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'll do that.
All right. Good luck.
Good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
You betcha.
Thanks, David. Thanks for calling. And
be
thanks
safe.
For waiting. Yeah, be safe. John in Lake Mills, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hello, Larry. My problem is I have carpal tunnel. Well, let me start off this way. In the 70s, I did a lot of repetitive manufacturing work and that. And then my doctor thought I had it. But he said to worry. And I went to saw a therapist, and they did some exercises and that. He said not to do the surgery at that time because the way they're doing stuff. And then I got into a management job, and I didn't do any more manual labor for a long time. And then in the 90s, I started doing manual work again. And I went and had an EMG, and they said I should have surgery, but I held off. And I just went and had it again, that EMG, because the pain has gotten so bad now. And the test came back negative this time. And the orthopedist was stunned because he has the result from my first test in the 90s. And now it's showing that I don't have it, but when he does the test in the office, he says I have it, so I'm trying to figure out if there's some other...
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, all tests have some error to them. So, you know, I mean, they could repeat the EMG and see if there was a problem with how the EMG was done. You know, most of the time, physicians make decisions based not just upon tests, but upon listening to the patient, at least a good physician will. So hearing your complaints and doing a physical exam of you in the office, if the physician believes you have carpal tunnel, I'd probably go with that rather than the last EMG. One of the surgeons I work with, I always appreciate, he says, I don't operate on x-rays, I operate on people. So he should make those decisions based upon all the information he or she has gathered, not just one piece of it. So
I was just wondering, is there any type of exercise I can do to help relieve the pain?
You know, there's, to the best of my knowledge, there's not a lot of exercise to relieve the pain. There's positioning, to position your wrist and fingers in a way that reduces the stress or tension on the nerve that passes through that carpal tunnel. And again, the hand therapist that you saw in the past, those are the people who are best versed in the splints and braces and things to help you with positioning. But there aren't any other exercises really that I can recommend. I don't know if Bill has any other ideas to relieve the pain.
Yeah, the local issue, again, splinting is for the splints to be worn at night, different kinds of splints you can wear during the day. I think sometimes from an exercise standpoint, there can be a postural component to why the carpal tunnel is not going away. So again, having them examine you up through your shoulders and upper back and neck region would also could be useful, could be helpful, along with anything that's done locally to your wrist.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for calling. Jackie in Stockton, Illinois. Hi to you.
Greetings. Back in 2000, I joined the International Oops Club. In other words, I slipped and I, when I, yeah, I hear all kinds of funny stories how this happens. But anyways, I happened to look up and here's my ankle, hanging off of the bone. So I had major surgery in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Really good stuff. Have lots of two, stainless steel, bars in my leg or rods and then a plate. But the short of all this is now that the last 2 years, both of my feet have suffered from this, and I find myself when I realize I'm doing it, I'm walking, I'm putting my foot down, both feet on the outside of my foot. I don't know if that's supination or pronation. I don't remember anymore. And that has caused a number of issues, and one of them being that on my right foot, the surgery was on my left foot, my left ankle with the plate and rods. And on the right foot, is it the big toe that has the joint that comes down below the toe line? I don't know how else to say it. Sorry, folks. But there's a joint there, and then the joints and the big toe itself really ache, and now I've been putting little pads that keep your toes separated, so that so that big toe really aches, I don't know what to do about it. So I'm going to go to a podiatrist surgeon, and I'm a little worried about that. But the other foot too, this I have tons of calluses developed, and so much so that they're really painful. So when I go to this podiatrist, who's a surgeon, which scares me, but that's the only one we have out here. He's a surgeon. What should I be asking to do? I'm wearing Dansko shoes, you know, one of the big box on it, so that my foot mm-hmm. has plenty of space. My right foot has plenty of space; that they're not pinched at all. And it's a hard sole. One of the doctors told mm-hmm. me I always wear something that does not bend at the ball of the foot.
Okay. Well, this was 7 years ago. You had this fall, or whatever oop that took place, and you've markedly changed how you walk. So you'd have the podiatrist take a look at your feet from, you know, an orthotic, biomechanical aspect, and then see a physical therapist who has some expertise in gait and foot and ankle, just how the loads are transferred through the foot and the ankle and up the kinetic chain is a science in and of itself. So finding somebody who really specializes in foot and ankle and who can look at both of your feet to see if, as a result of the surgery, if you have loss of mobility in one area that's being compensated for in another area, the calluses on your feet are a sign that you've changed the way you walk. And somebody needs to take a close look at you mechanically and see if there's anything that can be done to more normalize that. The podiatrist will look at it from the orthotic perspective. A PT should look at it from a movement perspective. How do the joints move? Do they move like they're supposed to? How do the muscles move? Do they move at the appropriate times? Is it habitual because it was painful? Is there anything that can be done about it at this point in time? And so on and so forth.
I see. Well, thank you. One last question. Would recently, and this has just been like the past 2 months, on the right foot again, my heel has become so painful, so now I'm putting those gel pads on the bottom of it.
You're just patching things together.
Right now,
you're somewhat lucky in that it's only your feet that hurt. But when you start changing the way you walk, you can expect eventually your knees will hurt, your hips will hurt, and your back can hurt. So that's why when people have problems in one area, we really like to look at the entire lower extremity, because we know that eventually if you make a change at one joint, it has to be compensated for someplace else in the kinetic chain. Mm. So it'd be good to get a good look at it, get yourself straightened out a bit, and think about prevention.
Mm-hmm. This Stockton is a very small area, and is there a clinic that you would recommend any place in Wisconsin that I could go to that would specialize in the therapy and or the, what do you call it, the person who looks at and studies that, biomechanical?
Mm-hmm. Right, for gait. Jackie, if you'd be willing to maybe leave your contact information, email address, or phone number. Maybe I get back to the office, I could look up and see who might be in your area, and I'd be happy to get you that information.
Okay. Larry, how do I do that?
Well, and just stay on hold, and Jim Packard will
pick me up.
Take the information. Yeah, we'll put you on hold.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your help.
Good luck, Jackie.
And we'll put Jackie on hold, and we will go to Bob next in Jackson. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good afternoon, Larry. And good afternoon, guests. I have a starter for my comment, which is fishing, which, Larry, I know you enjoy.
Yes.
I fell out of a salmon stream in Alaska last summer, directly on my right shoulder, and have, after the MRI, the orthopod said, you have a massive tear in your rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have listened to you, Lori, and Bill. A couple of programs ago, you talked to a fellow in Eau Claire that had that. And I must tell you, I went through 2 months of physical therapy in October and November. And because I had already then satisfied my cut off a leg health plan, continued in December for another 4 sessions, I can now throw a fly rod with my right arm. Last summer, Larry, if I would have met you, I could not have reached out and shaken your hand.
Oh, boy.
Well, hallelujah. Yeah.
And it was physical therapy. Can I give the gal an advertisement?
Sure.
Her name is Ann Hazy. She's in West Bend. She is the PT manager at that clinic. And I'll tell you, she's even told me she wants to write an article.
Oh, good for her. Well, you sound like a great patient. I'd love to work with someone like you.
Right, right.
Bob, thanks.
Well, I'll tell you, you have got to do your home exercise.
Oh, thank you for saying that, Bob.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes. Appreciate it very much.
All right.
Always nice to hear those kinds
it
of
is.
Success stories.
It is.
Dan in from Cleveland, Ohio, who I think is driving through. Let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
Good.
My problem started about, 15 years ago. I was traveling from Michigan to Cleveland every weekend, and, I have, my right buttock. It felt like I was sitting on a golf ball sometimes when I was driving. And I carried my wallet back there, and eventually, pain just got worse and worse and worse. Sometimes I was also riding a 10-speed. I would do long rides on my 10-speed, and my right leg would go numb. So in any case, I kind of self-diagnosed a sciatic nerve problem.
Okay.
And I was just wondering, then it would come and go. It'd be something that would just go away for a while, and I may be 6 months without a problem at all. And I'm 51 now, and I was power washing the side of my house in the fall, climbing up and down a 30-foot tall ladder, and man, that aggravated this thing to the point where I can barely walk. So right now it doesn't hurt all that bad, but I'm walking through the airport this morning, and I've noticed I'm almost losing control of the way I walk, and I walk funny now.
Yeah.
Is this a degenerative thing, or?
Well, it can be. And that's what can end up putting pressure on the sciatic nerve or one of the nerves coming out of your low back area that form the sciatic nerve. Dan, have you seen a physical therapist any point along the way?
No, I haven't seen a physical therapist. I mean, I mentioned this to my doctor when I go and get a physical, and he keeps telling me to get an MRI, and I never get the MRI.
Well, what I would, before you do an MRI, I would see a physical therapist and have them examine you. There's certain exercises, programs that are designed to help get symptoms up out of the leg and keep them out of the leg, and that's what has to happen before the buttock symptoms have a chance to go away. The sciatic nerve can get irritated at different points. Sometimes it's in the buttock area, right where your wallet sits. Sometimes it's up higher in the low back area. And again, that would change the type of exercise program that someone would put you on. So the history of episodes that come and go, sometimes you're really bad, sometimes you're better. This is not something that's probably going to go away by itself completely on its own. And you have to worry about the episodes getting more and more severe as time goes on. So if you're doing it fairly well at this point in time, this is a good time to go in and be seen by somebody, because then you can be put in a pretty aggressive program right off the bat.
I like to run on a treadmill, and I find I could do that pretty well. It doesn't really bother me. Does that aggravate it, you think, or?
Well, it can. Mm-hmm. If the sciatic nerve is irritated to a degree, then running can aggravate it at that point in time. But again, there may be some stretching exercises you do before you run that can help. But again, that's the kind of thing where a physical therapist can put together a program specific for you. But this sounds like to me like a good time for you to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Might have time for one more. Tim in Wausau, have you got a quick question?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi.
7 or 8 years ago, I had, because of complaints about my left shoulder, I ended up having MRIs on both of my shoulders, and they involved a dye injection. And the diagnosis was that I had a little or no cartilage in either shoulder, and there was really no explanation for both shoulders. I had had a moderate weightlifting injury a few years before that in the left shoulder, but the right had, there was really no trauma. So my question is, I'm basically a healthy guy, almost 60 years old, and when I exercise my pecs or my deltoids, doing any exercise that exercises them, I get dull pain in the shoulders and I guess what I'll call catching in both shoulders, and it escalates with the amount of exercise.
Okay, well, we've got just about 40 seconds here.
All right, this will be the Mach 2 answer. It's unusual to have loss of cartilage in your shoulders, particularly both shoulders. I'm guessing it was somehow congenital, that you were born that way. You need to avoid heavy lifting and too much repetitive lifting in your shoulders. You need to stay as much as you can below shoulder height. If you need some guidance, see a physical therapist about what kind of exercises you can do, how you can keep your upper body strong without wearing out your shoulder joints.
Yeah. And Tim, I thank you very much for calling. And Lori and Bill, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You'll be back in a month?
Yes, we will.
About a month, and we'll do this all over again. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Bill's an associate professor at the UW Medical School. Lori, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And thank you all very much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.